Hi, Ashley.
Hey, Lynn, how are you, darling?
Fabulous.
My first time doing a podcast, so this is great.
Yeah, very exciting. Always good to do something new.
Absolutely.
As people arrive, we can bend and flow. Yeah, it's Sunday, October 22nd, 2023, and we have a newbie on a podcast here, Ashley Richmond, and I can call you Ash, right?
Yep. Thanks, Lynn.
Yeah, well, welcome to Living on Purpose. And I've been talking to you over the last while about precious metals and so many of the signs of the times and why people should trade this money, this paper, I mean, purchase or investment or consideration of just having a variety of backup for currency and for exchange, right?
It's got 5,000 years of history. It's been around the time where it's been used for currency since the Greeks, was it 550 BCE exact, when it was used. Reason being is because gold and silver is a hard commodity to come by. Anything that's very difficult to come by is obviously going to have a perceived value. It's much harder, with gold. I think it's 400 feet below the ground. I don't know exactly with silver because it's a byproduct of zinc and copper when mining. But the amount of silver now as an availability is becoming less, especially in this new age right now. Obviously, if you want to go with historical times, it's always been used as a financial asset. But then obviously when the financial revolution in the 18th, 19th century came in, that's when we started seeing silver as a commercial use. So electrical, mirrors, medicines, so on and so forth. Something that wasn't just a financial then expanded so much because of its amazing properties as a material, then had a second use. That's what makes silver absolutely so beautiful and over above gold. A, it's an investment. B, it's got industrial use way much better than gold. For myself, especially in this day and age right now, you've got the bond market that literally is saturated. It's gone past 33 trillion. It's gone past the point of no return. Bill Holter said it quite simply very recently. It's mathematically going to happen that it's going to crash. The dollar is going to be worth a lot less. And I think really in retrospect, it comes down to you can either believe that or not. Now, one of the interesting things that why a lot of people are back and forth about silver and other commodities is because there's so much information. How can you say, oh, silver's going to be should be worth so much more than it is, which makes sense because right now, if you look at the US debt clock, not to divert, but the US debt clock, when you see the gold ratio or the silver ratio, in 5 years, silver's at 1,500 and something US dollars, and the gold in 5 years is worth 12,900, whatever it may be right now. How they work that out is how much money they've printed divided by how much silver they've mined or gold. And that's how they come up with that number. Actually, if you look at the debt clock today, right now, it's zero. Silver is zero, gold is zero. But in 5 years, supposedly, now, how have they done that? How have they come up with that? It does not make any sense whatsoever. JP Morgan, all the commercial banks are actually buying heavily, and that's where the most of the silver is going. The commercial banks. There is no point of return when it comes to this now. As an insurance policy, we pay our insurances for our auto and our home insurance. We never yield that back. It's a monthly fee that we never get back. So precious metals is basically that. It's an insurance policy. You've got some of the biggest heavy hitters in the world literally saying, you've got to get gold and silver. It's the most responsible investment you're going to do, and it's insurance. Are you going to think that you're going to get rich from it? If the dollar goes down, it's not looking about getting rich. It's about preserving your buying asset. And as Bill Tolter said, he goes, how much gold and silver should I buy? He goes, buy what you're not willing to lose. So whatever you put into cash now into silver, you won't lose that ever because gold and silver are the only two commodities in the world that cannot be bankrupt. You and I, our house, yield bonds, anything like that you have can actually be bankrupt. Gold and silver, better than us because it cannot be bankrupted. The only two commodities, and this is the reason why all the banks, all the sovereignty wealth corporations, they're all heavy into gold and silver. Up until 14 years ago when I moved to Canada from the UK, I never knew about investing in gold and silver. It was never a thing. I was lucky that I was able to get into this industry. And it was very surprising because it's kind of like I should never revert it to crypto, but that's the digital. Is that going to do well? Anything digital is speculative. You put in what you're prepared to lose. You're always going to be guaranteed with silver. What it looks like the horizon is going to be is the US dollar is going down. I don't know what it's going to tank to, whether it's going to go sideways, but it's not going to be worth anywhere near. Anybody that has any stocks or anything, unless they've somehow won out now and it's up, but I think all stocks are down, either get out of them or you just ride the wave and prepare to go to zero. You've got to hedge that with things like silver. You can always also hedge with crypto. Why I say that? Because it's not a crypto conversation, but I think with XRP right now, which is one of my favorites, and XLM, the only two that I really like, they can be both linked to silver as precious metals in the future. And that's what it seems like they're looking for. They are getting away and they're going more towards retail banking, and XRP is becoming very, very big. The future values of that is going to be huge. And I think they're going to be linking it to precious metals. That's speculative, but it's only pennies right now to buy. Once again, if digital goes to zero, then that's useless. Once again, your insurance policy is silver and gold. And my favorite's been silver. I've been buying it for 12 and a half years now. Silver would be the first thing I ever buy. Or any other investments, I would always buy silver because I like the fact that it's investments and it's commercial use. And we're becoming more and more green. Everything's becoming more and more electric. So even from just a commercial element, I think there's not going to be enough silver for the future of the requirements.
Okay, so this is all very interesting, of course. Feather has just joined us. Okay, so Ash, you just said XRP. What does that stand for? That's a stock?
So no, XRP is a cryptocurrency. XRP is the code. So let's say you're looking for crypto, you put XRP. It's basically like a Bitcoin, but actually it's better than Bitcoin because it's not 30 odd thousand. I think XRP is about 69 Canadian cents. It works a million times faster and it's cheaper to run than Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was the first on, but it's not the best. Just think of how like MySpace was and now there's Facebook. It wasn't the first, but Facebook's better. Or I'm not a big fan of it, you know what I mean? An engineering perspective. So with XRP, if anybody looks into it, I've kind of had a look into it as a speculative, but another option, because if inevitably they're going to be moving to digital, we kind of are already with our Visa and debit cards, it's digital. So all they're going to do is do 100% of the same thing, but they can't peg it with the US dollar. They need something digital they can peg it with. Now they try to, BlackRock, I think, or whatever his name is, 4, 5, 6 years ago, he was saying crypto is the worst thing in the world. It's terrible. You know, there's going to be money laundering laws, etc. And then this year he was saying, we're big on crypto. Crypto is too big to fail to an extent. It can be manipulated because they can press the off button. That's where it can go down. But everything moving electronically, they say, oh, as a form of passage of use, there's too many people invested. But once again, it's digital. Anything digital can fail. But this is the reason why silver is so important, because there's two elements. There's one that's going to be a future use, but it's speculative and I say it's good. But silver and gold, especially silver for me, is one of those commodities that if this world goes to a hell in a handbasket, it's literally still there.
Okay. So a few things. We've got the silver and gold. They're valued according to dollars that are plummeting fast and may just not even exist. And so one question I have is, how do you value gold or silver if there's nothing to compare it to that way? So that's one thing. Another thing, very interesting little comment you threw in there about gold is mined 400 feet down or something. Yes. I'd like to hear a bit more about mines and where they are, especially because of this ratio of 7 to 1 for gold and silver.
Yes.
There's that. And then I'm piling a lot on here. The other thing is the banks investing heavily in silver and gold.
There's never really a great ratio, but it seems like this year they've been going more heavily on silver than gold, because I think the undervaluation, because I think it's pegged at 80 something to one right now, dollar for dollar. Yet, like you said, it's mined out the ground for 1 to 7, I think, right now this year. Sometimes it can 1 to 8, 1 to 7. I think this year is 1 to 7. So every 1 ounce of gold, there's 7 ounces of silver mined. So you really mathematically, 1 ounce of gold divide by 7, that's your true value for silver. And it's not. It's 80. As a devaluation, it's ridiculous. JP Morgan is one of the heaviest investments, infrastructures that are actually buying into gold and silver. They've been suppressing it for years. I think when the Hunts brothers back in 1979, when they actually cornered the market. They put it on a speculative COMEX or something. This is the reason they failed, because they would have actually cornered the market and kept silver at a true value. It should have stayed at $50, whatever it is, and then slowly rose over the time. And then, you know, it was manipulated back down. And then in 2011, we saw it hit kind of close to $50 Canadian, I think. And then once again, went down to the teens and the $20 kind of values and went back up. Why is such a commodity that is so valuable being suppressed? Anything good usually never lasts that long. And I think this is not to deviate away, but I think in the last close to 4 years now, we've seen a lot of things open up about this world that we really never knew about. And I think that opens up the imagination, not only the imagination, but the fact finding that's going on right now. I knew about manipulation beforehand, but then when the floodgates open and then people open up about X, Y, and Z with, you know, it's COVID, now we've got the wars going on. War is always usually done from a financial perspective, as we know, as sad as it sounds. And COVID seemed to be the same thing. We can see now with the reports that all these manufacturers are now starting to get sued, legality-wise. I think some of us knew that it wasn't what it seemed to be. Some people bought into it. I'm sure, Lynn, you're the same as me. I didn't drink the Kool-Aid. So anybody that did, then fair dues. I hope you're well, you know, God willing. But it showed what it did. It opened up the flood market with people now never realizing about precious metals to now being heavily invested. There was one woman as a customer, I spoke with her about 20 minutes on the phone, and then we met in person when she came to the store. And another half an hour conversation. She took all her stocks out and literally bought close to 400,000 in one go of silver. I talked to her about, look, think about how you want these broken down. You want easy asset products rather than, say, 100-ounce brick, which is fantastic. But digital linguistics is going to put it at about $600 an ounce as a buying power later on. Probably the 2030 agenda, maybe it'll be around that. Some people are saying 2024, 2025. There is no exact date. All I know is right now, when you can buy silver for $30, $40, $50, it's a joke and it's a bargain. Wherever you buy it from, just make sure it's legitimate. Yeah, always have manageable sizes, because there's ways of looking at it. There could be places like our store, maybe even the banks, but I wouldn't really trust them, but third parties that will buy. But don't forget, when that value goes up and you've got a 100-ounce brick and it's $600 an ounce, that's a $60,000 bar. I don't know, you might need to be trading for property at that point, because that 60,000's, you know, property is going to go down eventually. It's going to have to. This can't retain these crazy prices. So you've got to think about, if you are buying in silver, buy. I always buy kind of 1 ounce up to 10 ounce. That's my maximum size. It's manageable. Also, reason being is, I think you don't want to be having a heavy brick, because mining right now, it's good, but it's, once again, I think in the future, it's a great prospect when it comes to opportunities. But I think mining as it goes in the future, unless they don't start hiking the price of silver, a lot of mining companies are not going through, because they're not able to make any great profit. That's the thing, they're suffocating, because how can you mine when you're not making a great deal? Now, I was looking last night, Lynn, and I actually had an up-to-date 2023. It costs around $15 in change US dollars to extract it out of the ground. You've got stampage then, you've got distribution, you've got the product going to then the retailer or the wholesaler and all those between. So from $15, that's US. And the spot price is 22, 23. I can't remember what it is in US right now. You haven't got a great deal of money between mining it, turning it, stamping it, and then physically getting it to the location. There is no margin to be had. So what they're trying to do is, like, some companies are like, yeah, we can't sell below that. Some might do $12 an ounce. But on average, the same with within the US and North America, it's kind of around the 14 to 15 in change mark. I think when demand goes high, the price has to go up, because if you don't got the silver, there's no electricity moving forward.
Okay, so you just mentioned the spot price. That's something I wanted to be sure to mention. So the spot price is, it's sort of like the wholesale, but it's not quite, because you got spot and then wholesale and then retail, right?
Yeah, so spot price, which in Canadian, when I left the office yesterday, was around $31 Canadian in change. When you buy it from retail, it's around about anywhere, a cheap one is about $36, $37. And then Silver Eagles, if you really want to buy those, which I wouldn't recommend, is about $45, $46, which is way over $10. It's getting close to $15 an ounce.
It's 0.999 silver troy ounce, right? Why do you pay more for some coins than others?
So silver eagle is actually only 3 nines. Compare this with a Canadian maple, it's 4 nines.
Oh.
If you want to go with specifics, the US eagle has a $1 face value. The Canadian maple has a $5 face value. And I find it more attractive. And it's got security features as well. It's got the privy mark on the lower right-hand corner of the stalk of the maple, and it has radial lines. Both features actually stop it being reproduced from a third party. There hasn't been a fake one since 2014 when they introduced those security features, but you'll still find US eagles that are made elsewhere. So as a product goes, if you wanted the ultimate Rolls Royce of products, the maples, the Canadian maple, and the UK Britannia, because they both have security features. And no, it's not technology where it can track. A lot of people have asked that. You can't track it. It's just engraving. In today's society, you never know, they can track anything. But with regards to that, they're the two best secured items on the market when it comes to silver and diversity, because they're 1 ounce as well.
So they have these values stamped on them, but they're worth a lot more. So how does that figure?
So what it is, when you've got a product made from a sovereignty corporation, so you've got the Royal Canadian Mint, which makes the coins for Canada, loonies, toonies, so on, and say the UK. So the UK Mint make the Britannias because they also make the coins in pounds, pence, etc. So they're not allowed to, they can with the bars, but they can't with a coin not make something that has a face value. Or if so, they can class it as a medallion. That's the only way they can retrospect a coin that doesn't have a face value. So it's more like a, you know, you'll have an effigy on one side and a symbol on the other side, depends on the commemorative aspect of it. But when it comes to coinage, what's interesting about every country that makes a 1 ounce product that actually makes the country's coins, it just shows that it actually true has a spendable value. It has a face value on it, but that doesn't mean that represents the true value of it. It's a representation that they're identifying that this is actually true money. We can't spend it. We're not going to go to the store with our 1 ounce, $5 face value maple and try and spend $31 or whatever it is on there. That's crazy. It's an investment, but it's an investment that A, it's got a proof of stampage on it, shows that it's a legitimate item. B, can't bankrupt it. Whereas a loonie and toonie, that can be bankrupted tomorrow. And that's the nice thing about precious metals. It's a very old school way of doing things. It really is. But it's the proper way. And it's the genuine way that always works through inflation. It's a great hedge because every single time when you're printing money, everything's going to be worth less, basically. And when your assets start going down, year on year on year, gold and silver has always brought your cash flow up. It's always insured your money. It's always kind of risen at the same time. So you're always, it's kind of like having a buoyancy aid or a life vest on a financial level. It really is. And people that bought this for years are so thankful. If you look at history, I don't want to ever bring up a past, but when people ever wanted to escape a country through war times, the people that survived had gold. Usually it would have been gold sovereigns or gold 20 franc coins. They are the ones that have the families today. The ones that did not get that gold, I don't know what happened, but the ones that did were able to pay their way through and they were able to survive. And that's one of the interesting things a lot of people, maybe they forget or they just never knew. You just look at history, usually follows trends, not saying we're going to escape and we need our gold and silver, but it just shows you the concepts behind survival. And you'll just have people today, the families that went through the hardship and got over through forward thinking are doing the same thing. There'll be one or two people that just weigh off and they just don't care. They've gone through 2-3 generations and like, well, I don't care. This won't happen to me. Not a problem. But don't forget the reason why you're here is because your grandparents, your great-grandparents got you here through forward thinking. They knew what was going to happen and they invested in something that they needed in the end. And a lot of people now get too complacent with things like these iPhones or anything that's online. I'm not quite sure why people are so scared to own something physically. Like if I didn't have this laptop in front of me, how would I be making this call? I'm not afraid to have this laptop. I'm not afraid to have investments physically. I think having too much dependency online, I feel like it's a comfort blanket for people. It's not really a good thing because people don't want the ownership or the onus of having the responsibility. The people that do take on the adult responsibility, can I say, of actually insuring themselves and their family are going to do very well in the future. and the people that get left behind, I'm sorry. There's going to be a lot of people because unfortunately there's not enough silver to even probably 3-5% of the population. It won't be enough. On average in the US, the average person, if they, with what's owned privately and they literally divided it, there'll be a 2-3 ounces per person.
Whoa, that's crazy, right? I mean, some people think that like you're in fear, right? To not trust the banks and to change money for silver coins. But I think it's a practical thing from the sounds of it. But what are the banks doing? Like, that's a vote of confidence in the dollar. They're loading up on it. But so what are they going to do with it? I mean, is it coming back to, like, it's been 1971 since the currency was backed with anything real, since Nixon stopped that, right?
That is correct, yeah.
So what are the banks thinking of backing? What could they even back? I mean, what are they thinking?
That's the thing is, what it is basically money printing. If you've got the opportunity, and obviously this was a governmental, and you've got, basically it's the bankers that run it. So you've got the bankers saying, look, we can actually back this. Instead of us actually having to back it with gold, we can manipulate that down. What we can do is promise the holy grail of digital printing. So we can print money, it's not backed. And what we can do, it's much easier than you typing in a computer. It's not as straightforward as this, but the Fed's literally just, okay, I will make another $1 billion today. It's easier for me to type $1 billion than me to dig out $1 billion from the ground. And, you know, with that power said, they got away with it. That was the starting point of the downhill. You got 52, 53 years nearly of our money just literally, it's worth as much as a post-it note. Even a post-it note's worth more. Can use it. It's absolutely terrible with the way they've used people with debt. Because if you think about it, on average, I worked out that $1 million mortgage, all the banks need to do is, I think, $1,000 of their own money they need to put up, $1,000. So you spend a lifetime paying that $1 million. And all they need to do is, I think, on the back end, they have to have $1,000 to support that. I know it wasn't 10,000. I think it's $1,000. It was enough to buy an iPhone, I think. And everything else is just digital. And they're making so much money on you from that $1,000. It is criminal. And I think with the awakening that's going to happen in the future, because more and more people are becoming smart, there's a lot of people with a lot of cognitive dissonance that maybe understand it, but just don't care. That's fine. Some people have got the fight in them to actually be able to do something about this. And I think that's what's happening over time is there's a lot of lawsuits going on with everything that's been going on. But once again, I think when people are trying to invest in X, Y, and Z, you need that insurance. And I think the grounding point, the practicality of it all is precious metals. It has been, and there's so much distraction. That's the problem. And I think people will just slow down and just get back to the core of it all. Silver as a product, as you know, a practicality in the electronics world, because that's becoming huge. If you want everything to be electric, including cars, it's going to need silver. And there will never be enough right now to be able to do everything. And we know electric can't off the grid. You're crazy. No one's going to have power. And it's so pollutive as well to actually have a gasoline car. But if you've got all the commercial banks and Fed and everything are all buying into gold and silver, they know that it's going to go back up. So they've got to literally preserve what they have because China's got most of the US debt. How does that look? I don't think they're really in good friendship mode with China. And all it needs to do is the bond market over the next 5 years, if they keep printing, a lot of people are just not going to use the US dollar anymore. The debt's going to recall on itself. What is the US going to do? Buy their own debt back? No one wants it. The whole world doesn't want it right now. I don't think the US wants their own US dollar. That's the thing. So it's kind of like hating upon themselves. They're trying to push it towards other countries. Everybody, even third world countries, have realized you're useless and they're pushing it back. So you've got all your investments into a dollar value. And you know what? The Canadian dollar's pegged, the UK pound's pegged. So anything doesn't make a difference. It's just not the US dollar, it's everything. So anything that you have as an investment, that's a dollar value, you're going to see a radical decline. And once again, what are you going to do to compensate that? One goes down, the other one has to go up. So which one's going to go up?
If you step back, you can see that money is, what is money? People are using money to exchange, but I mean, you can do exchanges without money in the middle. You know, like if I need bread and you need eggs and we each have that, we can trade them. And, you know, the whole thing with tracking all of the expenses of money is for income tax, which was not supposed to continue past the World War. But we've been forced into this, and you can go to jail if you don't do it. I mean, it's not like a voluntary thing. And so the whole money thing has been a way to track people. And so it's very interesting how people are waking up to other things that they never would have thought of before. I wonder if either of our guests have any question or comment at this juncture.
I do have a question, and it's a very 101 type question. And thanks so much for this, Ashley. I'm going to listen to it a couple more times so I can be more focused. But when you don't have a lot of money to begin with, and you want to be smart, you want to take what small savings you might have out to translate it into what I'm hearing now more is silver. Yes, to gold, but silver perhaps more appropriate. So you have a bundle of silver in your arms. Where is the safest place? It's heavy. Where do you suggest keeping it, for one thing? I mean, I appreciate that there are many people translating their wealth into gold and silver. There are many of us who want to be wise, who aren't wealthy, you know, and want to be able to have that silver. And then how do we access it to use it if we need to use it as money, as a form of exchange? So it's kind of two questions in there. But specifically, I just wonder where to keep it safe. And if you need to leave in a hurry, we've in BC, lots of fires. I mean, what do you think? What's your sense of that?
You know what it is? It's an amazing question. Long story short, you keep it where you can put your hands on it at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. So a lot of people go and put it into a security deposit box at the bank. You might as well just keep it in cash at the bank. It's the worst place. So when COVID happened and the banks locked down, there was a lady that wanted to sell some of her precious metals because she lost her job. Her bank was closed for 8 months and she couldn't gain access. And she was worried that the bank would close forever. Thank God it wasn't. It opened up again. But that was a very telltale sign. Also, I read a story of a gentleman. I know this is a little long story, but it gives you an insight. There was a gentleman in California, affluent guy, kept all of his cash, gold, silver, and the pink slips to a few high-end cars. Anyway, so the bank had one tracing or recording of fraud. So by law, the banking laws in California, they were able to close the bank down and they were able to empty all the security deposit boxes. So the gentleman goes, tries to reclaim everything. The only thing he could get back was the pink slips to his cars, because that's the only proof of what he owned. There wasn't his name or his address or anything stamped on the money, nor stamped on the gold and silver bars, etc. So I've always kept mine safe where I can get it, whether it's with myself, family. You've got to be very inventive the way you actually secure it. Some people I've known have dug big holes with GPS coordinates and literally dug it into the ground. For myself, I make sure it's accessible. You know your home the best. So I would always recommend to get inventive, even if you have to do a slight false partition of a wall or anything behind the mirror. Think, get inventive. That is the best way. When it comes to not having an extraordinary amount of money, don't worry about that. It's one of those things, whatever you're willing to preserve, think of it that way. So it could be $150, it could be $1,500, whatever it may be, whatever you're looking to preserve, that would be the best thing. Silver I like because A, it's not having a ton of money in 1 ounce of product. Let's think of it as product. With gold, you have a 1 ounce product. It's going to cost you around $2,700, $2,800 right now to buy. That's a big commitment for having a very small 1 ounce, 31.1 gram item. And you've then have only got one selling option. So you buying the same on the silver, it's A, I just love the commercial element to it. And B, it's so tradable. It's not even funny. I'm finding people are preferring more committed to buying silver than there is gold, because now they're looking at the future of electric, whether it happens or not, doesn't make a difference, but they see the value in it, as well as you buy it for $30, even if it goes up exponentially and it goes to $500 an ounce and then gold is at $8,000 an ounce, you know, your $500 silver is going to be much more tradable than an $8,000 item in the future. That's just hypothetical. It's not a real number. But anything that you can put into it, you don't have to be very rich. Just anything you're willing not to lose, I would stick it into silver. Or if you can afford it and you're mega rich, gold as well. And there's never a magic number. JP Morgan, I think, has 400 million or 500 million ounces of gold, and they're at 1.2 or 1.4 billion of silver right now. That's probably a fake number. It's probably 10 times that, but that's just the one they want to issue, because we know that they got fined $900 million a couple of years ago for rigging gold and silver, and they'll just keep doing it. So yeah, long story short, that's what I would do. Get very inventive with hiding it. And me personally, I buy silver because it's very, very tradable, very understandable, and right now affordable. It won't be in the future, I don't think.
I really like that expression, if you don't hold it, you don't own it. You want to have it at hand. Yeah. I want to welcome Len to the conversation.
Hi, Len.
Hi. When you live in an apartment, it's hard to get inventive about where to stick this stuff.
I can see the painting on the back. I'm thinking like you could start inlaying it. I always think of Goldfinger, James Bond, you know, when he inlaid the gold into the Rolls Royce. Great idea, you know, the golden gun. I don't know. I just think it's genius. And it was before its time because they were in the 60s. And yeah. I think, yeah, with an apartment, you're restrictive, because I know with the apartment complex themselves, I know they have restrictions on what you can do. But it can be an item that I think can take away with you. I wouldn't want to make any suggestions, but you know what? Some people have made an excuse. They didn't want to, they've got a lot of money and they did not want to buy silver because it took up space. So I asked them straight away, how big is your coffee table? And they said, it's about that big. I'm like, okay, can you get that coffee table, throw it out the window, and then what you can do is you can buy a lot of silver and put a nice little awning over the top of it, because that will be a lot more useful. Why, like, you've got an IKEA or whatever, it could be $1,000 coffee table. You've got something that really does a very basic job, and if you want to buy a lot of silver and you've got all this money, you can literally do that. But even if, like I say, if you've got a couple of hundred dollars, it doesn't make a difference. Stick that, because it's going to be worth way more than a couple of hundred dollars down the line. And at least you've got some insurance and tradability. I even, in my wallet, carry a few ounces of silver. So really? On that day, yeah, if that debit machine doesn't work, I know I can go straight to either where I work or another institution, and I can, well, we're not an institution. That's actually a disgusting word. I apologize. So we're a private company that deals with precious metals, that I wouldn't deal with the bank, but another company that deals with metals. And at least I could trade that for whatever I needed. It would be the cash. So some people say you should always have cash on. I think when there could be this whole reset or whatever it's going to be in the future, maybe some usable cash, but at least worst case, even if it's not the cash, you've got the silver. Places that actually deal with trading gold and silver will always give you the money. They'll always have money on hand. They'll be able to give you tradability. Now, if nobody has money, good luck. You know what I mean? It's going to be a max scenario. And you know what? It's going to be like Germany. They came up with their own communities, and they used a currency called Notgilds, which was their own currency they created. Every little village had their own little design, and they used that as tradable. So they created their own like monopoly money, and they started trading. This for this, or there could be for services, or, you know, I'm good with DIY. Can you cook me a meal? You need your toilet fixed? Can I have a meal? It sounds prehistoric, but reality is you never know what's going to do. And I think having silver's good. You can't eat it. What if the food's out? You need to have a little bit of a backup on foods, have a generator and everything else. I'm a big believer in that. I'm going to buy another generator. I'm going to buy a solar unit. And my wife keeps saying I'm crazy because I'm storing up on food. So I have to revive it now, because when the start of the pandemic, I started doing that. And now I need to get more food, because I'm going to have to start eating the rest of it, because, you know, it's going to be up soon on these e-buy dates. But with everything that's been going on, if there was ever a time that anybody is alive today on this world, this is the time that precious metals is going to do their thing, because we know it's been manipulated for 50, 52, 53 years. That's a long time. Are we going to see this again? I doubt it. Not this big. I probably won't be alive anyway. So, but I think it's one of those things that I've learned a lot from customers. I've learned a lot from people that have put their money where their mouth is and not spoken about it. They've just done it. We had the CEO who bought into gold and silver, and we're talking millions. It was very private. We've got a very wealthy individual lady that we store with. Normally we don't store for customers, but this lady we did. She's got an endless amount of money. I don't know if she's a millionaire or a billionaire, but yeah, she's got endless money and she likes silver. And I'm 6'1" tall and I feel like I'm looking up there on her stash and it's wall wide. So it's one of those things. Yeah, there's some very smart people. And I realized when I got into this industry, I'm smart enough to realize that I didn't know enough, if that makes sense. a lot of things have been brought to light in the last 4 years, which I have very much disliked, tried to learn as much as I could on. Try and go with your common sense and your gut instinct and use your second brain, as they say.
I just have a question. Going through parents' estate right now, and there is a lot of silver, and some of it is plate, some of it is sterling. So at the point now of getting it assessed to see just what the grade of silver is in some of these things, let go of the ones that are just silver plate. But no. Would you think that it's a good idea at this stage to either hold on to that sterling silver as the thing itself, sterling silver teapot from the 1800s, or to have it assessed and sell it and buy silver? I mean, it seems almost...
You're coming up with very good questions. Okay, so if it is plated, which normally it would have no markings, so a normal product should have 0.925, it should have hall markings like a tiger or something, or it might even be 0.800, so it'll have 800 on it, depends on the country of origin. If it's plated, it usually has EPNS, which is electroplated nickel silver. If that's the case, the amount of silver on there is negligible. You can't refine it and then it's going to turn into a small amount. It will just dissipate. Now, when it comes to items that are made of sterling silver, let's say, is it a Burke's product? Is it got a marking from a manufacturer that it could be worth more as a collectible? Is one question. Anything I always tell people is, I love that the invention of silverware, because it's an antibacterial product. It was way before its time. You can kill the bacteria or the germs off your food while you eat. That's genius. If you said that today to a 20-year-old kid, they'd be like, my God, that doesn't exist. That's wizardry. But it's not. It's back in the 1920s, 30s, the way ahead of their time. If it's an item that you think could be used, I would keep it. Reason being is because if you send it to a smelter, well, you'd have to have a certain amount. But let's say you send it to a company that deals with buying gold and silver in general. They'll also buy cutlery, etc. They may give you around anywhere from 86% to 92%, depends on the quality. So you're automatically losing anywhere from 8 to 14% of the value purely by just selling it to a company. A refiner usually doesn't deal with an individual unless they have got an absolute ton of it. It's not worth it for them, but you could always ask. You know, you can always just punch into Google refineries near me, give them a call and say, look, I've got some of this. You give them the gram weight and they can work it out. If it's not taking up too much space, I think you should keep it because it's always going to have that inherent value. It comes down to a personal perspective. Okay, if it was me, I'd keep it. If you've got the space, it's not big, huge serving dishes that are going to be taking up a whole room, keep it. Because you've already got a commodity that's going to be worth something. You've got some at least usability out of it. But yeah, you're going to be losing some percentages already selling it to a company. So unless it's really in the way, Lynn can always give you information to me afterwards. I can try and work you through it. But I would personally, if it's not an obstacle in your life, I would definitely keep them.
From what you're saying, Ashley, thank you, is that it's only going to increase in value anyway. And in the meantime, have a cup of tea that's going to help your system.
Exactly. And you know what? It's a nice showpiece and everything. So you're keeping a bit of history too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I always thought it was funny. This woman I knew in her 90s, she was really keen to get silver cutlery. Yeah. I think she finally got some and it really gave her a good feeling.
Do you know what? My wife and I went to Fortnum & Mason. We came back from the UK not too long ago, 2 weeks ago. Fortnum & Mason is a high tea place. It was established in the UK in the 1700s. It's a bit of a posh place. My wife likes high tea. We went. It's astronomically expensive just to get some sandwiches and a cup of tea. It's in the hundreds of dollars. And they still have traditional sterling silver flatware. Not their cups. They had kind of bone china or whatever they did, but it was made by Fortnum & Mason stud or whatever. And they had the gold plating around the rim. Keep it authentic, but they kept with their cutlery. So from a heritage perspective, from the refiner perspective, you go even onto these private super yachts, they will not serve you with copper nickel. That's an insult. It's only silver, or unless they're very rich and they have gold. But silver is an antibacterial product. They still use it today. We're just so used to going to Walmart or IKEA and buying the garbage they sell. Anybody that's privileged to actually, in this day and age, to be able to eat with silver, they should feel very honored. I'll be honest with you. I wish I could afford it. Like, there's some places at work that you know, I wanted to buy myself, but they were scratched up, or the owner had another intent for it. But if someone offers me it for spot price or even 10, 15% above, I would be buying it in a heartbeat. Because you could resell that in a second for 50, 80% above spot, because it's a cutlery. The cost of manufacturing it alone costs more to mold it, manufacture it. And with the knives, you've got the steel blade and the shaft that's going through, and attaching all that's not easy. It's a logistical nightmare, but yeah, it's, if you've got it, please keep it. That's all I'm saying. That's from the heart. Seriously, keep it.
You got something there, Len?
Yeah, I have a question. Is it better to buy 1 ounce wafers or the 1 ounce silver dollars?
Oh, so like the silver dollars that used to be used in Canada from 1935 to 1967.
Well, you know, I have some. I can't remember what the dates are, but, you know, they're silver.
So they're 80% silver. They are recognizable around the world. A lot of people are deviating towards buying silver wafers or silver maples that are pure, because people like to work more on the pure system rather than a fractional. So the Canadian dollar being 80%, but it's still silver, just like sterling silver on the cutlery.
I should clarify, when I bought it, these are 99.99% silver.
Oh.
They're not in circulation, so to speak. So I'm just thinking, looking ahead, if you need to trade, are people are going to be more acceptable for a silver dollar shape or a wafer shape, you know?
Gotcha. So there are coin shapes, so like the maples or the silver rounds, eagles, whatever they are. Some people like to have diversity. Like I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you hear, but the silver maple in the UK, Britannia, they have security features.
Excuse me, is this a wafer?
It's a wafer, 1 ounce silver bar from Sunshine Mint. Yeah. There is no, in the future, people are not going to have the option. They'll be just begging to have silver. I don't think you're going to have that luxury. So whatever you have, coin or bar, you're going to be fine. I have the same. I have more coin than bar because I just love coin. It does not mean that the bars, the wafers or anything are worth anything less. No, I just love the detailing on them. That's a personal perspective.
Yeah, I understand.
You can stack bars much easier.
Yeah. And last question. A friend of mine put a fair bit of money into silver in various forms, including he bought some of these bricks of silver.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, what do you do with that?
Down the line, I think when there's a reevaluation, you're probably going to be buying a house or land with it, because it sounds like, is this an 100-ounce bar or a kilo?
Yeah, probably a kilo being here.
Kilo, so 32.15 ounces. Today's money, it's like 1,000 in change, which is nothing for a kilo. Moving forward, that's why I was saying, like, I think it's good to have 1 ounce. I go up to 10 ounce. So I've got 1 ounce, 2 ounce, 3 ounce, 5 ounce, 10 ounce. I don't go anything bigger than 10 because that's my prerogative. I like to keep it flexible selling. I don't want to be committed to selling one big brick. I've had a few millionaires that have literally spent $2-3 million and they'll buy just 100 ounce bricks because they don't care. They want to put it away. They've got other things to think about. They're done. They don't care.
Yeah.
And then selling it back in 100 ounces. Some people might want to decide to trade privately. And that's how I felt. Nothing against the companies I work with. It's just, you never know. What if the doors are shut one day? I'm sorry. I've got to think for myself. I've got to think for my wife, my family. I want that diversity. I want that flexibility happening. With 100 ounce, what if it's great? It goes up. It goes up to $1,000 an ounce. You got $100,000. Also, if it's a kilo, you got a $32,000 brick. No one's got anything to trade for it. At least with the 1 ounce, I can say, okay, can I get X, Y, and Z? It gives you a lot more flexibility. So it's not a Mad Max situation, but you've got to think forward thinking first, because we're getting a lot of people now selling their 100 ounces and wanting to convert it to 1 ounce. We'll give them full spot price, but don't forget they've got, well, and we'll jack the price of the selling price down, but they're losing. They'll probably get like the equivalent of 92 ounces equivalent. They're losing so many ounces by converting from big to small. So If you're not there already, start with the small. Buy Asahi Rounds. Asahi is a Japanese company. They are the largest refiner in the world now because they bought Johnson Matthey, which was over 200 years old. They bought them X amount of years ago. They are the cheapest rounds you can buy, and they are very recognizable. So don't go with the hocus pocus of maples, whatever. They have great security features, but Asahi is very well known. They're great. You can trade them. Oh, perfect. Lynn, so this is the Compass Rose round. So Lynn's just got it up on the screen. So it's three nines plus your notice. So when we scan these on the spectrometer, they're just as good as maples. They're basically four nines. Because the Asahi makes so many of them, they can never say that it's full four nines. So they, for legality purposes, they put 999 plus. It's still pure as a Britannia. This actually works out to be more pure than an Eagle when I've scanned them on average. They're such a great product. That's what I would recommend. I buy Asahi all rounds. I try and keep my costs low. Recognizability. Don't go with a blank bar that you do not know what it is. That does not have a manufacturer's stamp on. Unless you've melted down something and you know, and you can put whatever you want. But then again, people could question that in the future because they're going to have to test the bar, where it takes a lot of the questioning out if you actually buy something recognizable. And in this case, Asahi is, I think, is one of the best.
Yeah.
It's also one of the lower prices. And just following up on your question there, Len, I wanted to say that two of my favorite examples that I've heard for getting the lower denominations of coins or wafers, as you say, imagining like going to a farmer's market, like you want to take small increments, that's thoughtful to the vendors. And the other one is if you were traveling the world and you'd have no way to make change, no one would be able to make change for you. Think in terms of that kind of thing. It's very affordable. That's why it's nice to get some, what we thought you were talking about, Canadian silver dollars or US silver dollars that are from earlier on when it had more of a proportion of silver, then you have, you know, maybe $15 worth or $25 worth. So it's even less than the, you know, 38 or 40 per ounce for the other. So just to have those increments, you know?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. We have here in Vancouver, the Vancouver Bullion and Currency Exchange. You just walk in there, give them money, and they'll give you what I was talking about, the wafers or the rounds. Of course, they're stamped. So with something like Asahi, I think you're saying they're really recognizable and they're even at a lower price per ounce. Is that right? And how do you buy those? Where do you go for those?
Asahi should be all over. I don't know, the Vancouver company, they should be providing Asahi. Or if you go in, you can ask them. Asahi's all over the place. We supply their product, keep it low. They're all across the country. What I would do is have a look to see who else is selling them around your area first and foremost. We actually might be expanding the brand out into your area. So keep an eye out, or I'll talk with Lynn and Lynn will kind of let you know. There's a few things happening in the business that I work with. I've not really had permission. I've not even asked the company that I work for that I'm doing this podcast. I'm doing it out of a personal reason, an enjoyment for silver, but also I want people to, if they don't already know, which you guys seem to already know, it's more of a reassurance from the thousands of people I interact with every year from every level. We have kids coming in, I've saved up their pocket money, their parents bring them in, and they're buying their first 1 ounce. And you know what? Sometimes that gives me the bigger joy than someone coming in, dropping 500 grand on precious metals. It's nice to see that there's the younger generations getting into it. Not enough, though. I've learned a lot from a lot of customers and businesses that we deal with. You're doing the right thing. You know, wherever you buy from, like I say, as long as it's a legitimate source, don't buy from eBay. There's a lot of bad stuff going on eBay and all these third-party independent like Kijiji and stuff like that. You're asking for problems because there's no insurance. You know, there's no guarantee. Like if you buy something that's a reproduction, you're not getting your money back. Let's just say hypothetically there was some, you got a scratch on your coin. You can bring it straight back to us. We'll replace it. We'll make sure, and we apologize. We've never had that. But let's just say hypothetically that happens. We know because we can trace, oh, okay, we've got a sale from you, or you've just kept your invoice, even though you're a walking customer, it's not got your name on, shows proof that you purchased from us, absolutely fine. You can't do that when you're buying from an independent or third party. So just be careful with that. But I think in the future, there's going to have to be a lot more, there's going to have to be a lot more trust in the precious metals community. And I think things like this is part of a community where people should start to know each other, or at least there should be a list of, these are the people that we deal with, they're reputable, et cetera, because what if the businesses do go down and we want to trade together? You want to know that what you're buying is legitimate. Silver has a certain sound. When you've got a silver or gold ring, I have gold rings. So sometimes I do a tap. So I hold the, say a maple or a wafer, has a high ting. If it has a dull ting to it, and it has like a thud, it's plated. Has a high ting, it's silver. I know there's testing machines out there, spectrometers, handheld ones for a few thousand dollars, but that's a big investment. We have dedicated ones at the shop that are a lot more money. but we can test everything anytime and have a company that is part of the LBMA insurance. So LBMA is the silver and Lords of London is the insurance company. You want to make sure that a company that you're dealing with is at least backed up with the precious metals from the LBMA, which is like PAMP, Swiss, etc. When that's the grains. And then like Sunshine Mint, the wafer that you showed, Lynn, is one of those things where that'll be LBMA silver. Our company that I currently work with is insured by the Lords of London. That means it's got the highest policy in the world. It's insured. So if we've got $10 million worth or $100 million worth of gold and silver, we're fully insured. It's not the mom and dad shop down the corner. They've sold you a fake, so sorry, or they've got something in saving it for you and it goes missing. They've just got a normal business insurance. And the thing is, some of these private companies, the smaller mom and dad shops charge more. So it's not like you're getting a bargain, you're saving 50 cents an ounce, which yeah. I don't think people should be scrimping and saving on. We have people, yeah, can you reduce it by 30 cents or go elsewhere? And I'm like, you're paying 30 cents less, but you're buying it from an independent person. How do you know what you're getting is real? Are you insane? Like, there's a reason why it's cheaper. They might be selling you a copper. Copper's non-magnetic. Are you crazy? Everybody's different, but always, long story short, always buy from somebody reputable, please.
Okay. Thank you, Len. And Feather has a question.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi.
Thank you, Feather, for all your information that you're giving us. I bought some $10 Royal Mint maple leaves back in 2013. And I don't know if they're 1 ounce. They're 999.9. They say $10 value, but I bought them for $34.95.
Yeah.
And I've never seen the silver in 10 years go higher. I mean, it's in, I don't know what it is now, but it's never been higher than $34.95. So I basically feel like I've lost money. So I don't have the encouraging to keep buying silver. I don't know. Any advice on that?
Don't worry about it. What you did is you didn't buy bullion. You bought a Royal Canadian Mint collector coin. So they do them in $1, $3, $5, $10, $20, $30, $50, so on and so forth. And that represents size. So your $10 one is half an ounce of silver. Do not worry. I've actually bought some Royal Canadian Mint coins and I paid $80 for 1 ounce. So don't worry. You paid $35 for half. So yours is the equivalent of $70 an ounce. Do not worry. So that is a collectible coin. They make around, it depends on the $10. I know which one it is, the 2013. They did a leaf series of 12 coins. It's a set price. It's not going on the market value. It's going on what the Royal Canadian Mint is valuing it at. So yeah, basically as a bullion product, that's a collector coin. If you can actually concentrate on buying something like a silver maple, which is a $5 face value, 1 ounce, that would be like $38, $39. That's a pure 1 ounce. So the reality is don't feel despondent. What you did is you just bought a collector coin, not a bullion. With a collector coin, did you buy lots of them at all?
I bought 30.
Okay, you got 30. You've got 30 nice collector coins. The way silver's going to go, you're going to make a lot of money on that. So don't worry. Moving forward, though, let's try and make every dollar that you're investing be a little bit worth more. So
I have some other as well. Well, maybe it was 2 years ago, Lynn pretty well influenced me and I bought some more silver, but right. And it's more in the square bar or rectangle shapes.
The wafers. Yeah, that's perfect.
The wafer. Yeah.
Yeah. So always stay away from, well, don't stay away if you're a collector, but Royal Canadian Mint, they have two divisions. So they have their collector division and their main mass bullion market division. So the main mass bullion market gets you way more for your money. But like I say, most of the stuff that I have is not even Royal Canadian Mint bullion, like maples. I usually have a lot of silver rounds that are from different countries around the world, wafers, whatever it may be. I think it's nice to have diversity. Don't stick with one brand if it's affordable. But like I say, if you're buying and you don't put emotion into it, just buy something recognizable. Once again, I think as a coin, Asahi, or like the Sunshine Mint's good for their bars or anything recognizable. Good luck if you can buy Royal Canadian Mint silver bars because they're highly collectible now. They're $150 an ounce to buy, even though they were from the 1960s and 70s. They've surpassed their silver value, have become collectible. So keep that in mind. Smaller items, silver-wise, if they start getting past a certain period of age, they start becoming semi-collectible. Forget the material value. you've got the semi-collector value on top. I've been lucky enough to buy some old Britannias. I bought them for $22. They're $250 each as a collector on the open market now. Silver stayed the same or just moved a little bit. Semi-collector value grew. So when you see something old, that's 1 ounce of silver, genuine, buy it. Don't think about it because it will always retain its value.
Okay, thank you for that.
Food for thought.
I have to go soon to go cook, but this has been very refreshing. And thank you so much for your knowledge, Ashley.
Oh, I think I taught too much. It's just a small insight. This world is very big. So I'm giving a very small, tiny insight to, you know, you could peg this all to the bond markets and everything else. And I don't know enough to go into that on a freestand. I do know a little bit, but it's not worth knowing that. All I know is that the dollar is going to go down. It has to. And all you need to do is just insure yourself. So Lynn's driven you in the right direction of securing your wealth, at least your money, whether it's a lot of money or a little amount, doesn't make a difference. The principle's there. You just need to preserve it.
I have to go, Lynn. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for dropping in.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
So I just thought I'd add in here, Ashley. I just looked up the website for DBCE. It says, is Canada's largest, most reputable dealer for investors who prefer physical bullion. And it goes on from there. And it does say that dealer and trader in qualified bullion recognized by LBMA accreditation.
That's good.
It's on from there. So that's where I've gone. I didn't look up the current price for today for a round of silver, but I think it was around $30 or 31 or 32 or something at the time. So Asahi would probably be by mail or something, or do you actually go somewhere physical to pick it up?
Also, we actually physically, you can pick up or we send. They should have it on hand. If they're the largest in the country, they should also, unless they're just a distribution outlet, there's a lot of places that are large, but they just distribute out. They're like Amazon, but they're just for the bullion world. But you said you've physically gone there, is that correct? And there's a little kiosk?
No, they have a storefront, several in Vancouver.
Okay, wonderful. They probably got a lot of locations. And yeah, so they should really have Asahi. If not, they should. You could always ask them to say, if I wanted to buy an Asahi, do you supply it and how much? May I ask what you've paid for a wafer in the past, just to give me an idea?
It's like the low 30s, I'm thinking.
Oh, that's great. How long ago was this?
A couple of years, maybe.
Oh, okay. Trying to think what it was back then. It's gone up a little bit. I think, I don't know what the cheapest are, but if a competitive rates are 36 to anywhere, 39, 40, depends on the item you're buying. Because Royal Canadian Mint sadly charge more for their maples than Asahi do for their silver rounds.
So the ones that I have from BBCE, I'd have to actually go get one to look at it. I think they're maples, but I'm not sure. Why would Asahi be better than those?
Cheaper overall. If you think, because Asahi, you can, I think they're around 36 in change when it, on Saturday, the last time I was there, yesterday, and maples were in the 40s.
Why would there be a difference?
So Asahi manufactures so many compared to the Royal Canadian Mint that they can keep their cost low because they've got contracts around the world.
I see.
We're lucky because actually they bought Johnson Matthey, as I mentioned, and Johnson Matthey, they've got one manufacturing outfit in Brampton, which is a 40-minute drive from where we are. So we can get product very fast from Asahi. We're lucky. And, you know, we buy in volumes. We buy enough where it's warranted. And because we sell so much, we can do a week's order and all you need is two or three big hitters. And that we just take that order up. We just got to order some more again. So, yeah, it's one of those things trying to keep buy recognizability. And because Asahi's around the world, Royal Canadian Mint is too. But I think from volume, Asahi's much more well-known.
Yeah.
We just know Canada because it's Canadian. The UK know because of the Britannia and the US from the Eagle. And every other country has their own preference. But as a tradable item, it's more, it's known around the world because they're so big now. So, yeah, there's no harm having both. Just trying every dollar you save, you can put it more towards the extra ounce. And you've got the same recognizability as a maple. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Ash, what about this? I was sort of steered away from the Canadian coin, Canadian mint, because one person's opinion was that after the war or something, or during the war, they recalled Canadian coins, like you had to give them up to the government.
So in the US, that happened with gold, right? So in the late 1920s and early 30s, you had to give up your gold from a legality standpoint. The government then reissued it at another 50 or 100% more. In retrospect, I can't remember what Canada did. I think the way things are going, I don't think it makes a difference. I don't think a lot of people are going to A, disclose what they have, B, trust the government as much. And if people that do hand in their silver and it's got a stamp on it of some kind and that gets recalled, people are not going to do it. Just because it has a face value, you know what you're going to do? Retrospect, they're going to get an angle grinder and just tear off the $5 on it and the queen, and they're good to go. You know, you can get the Dremel from Home Depot and then just start doing your own creative work. You're done. Still an ounce of silver, maybe minus a gram, but at least then it's not going to be taken away, supposedly. I don't think that would ever stand up. We've become a lawless society, Lynn. If you think about it, look at the Constitution in the US. They keep saying it doesn't exist. It does exist. It's just, it's like a no smoking sign. But people are still going to have a cigarette, and people are going to go, the government's still going to go against the Constitution. So, you know what? People have learned now, and we're becoming now more of a criminal society where people are just not going to abide by the rules as much anymore. The people that are awake anyway, the people that are asleep, all the best. We're not going to be in that same category, though. This is the reason why we have this talk. This is the reason why there is certain communities out there, and it's always been around and it will always continue. There's going to be people that are still sleeping, and there's the people with the fog lights on ready to go. All I'm going to say is I wouldn't worry about what's stamped on a coin as long as it's recognizable. If it comes to that, a little cauldron will melt it all down, turn it into something else. We'll turn it into knives and forks.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, there's this this series, The Hidden Secrets of Money by Mike Maloney. And one of the things that I find really interesting in what he talked about, one of the many, is how you would have a chunk of silver and they would just trim little bits of it off. That would be your admission or something, just trimming a bit of the silver off. They do that now. Except they do it by reducing, like, the roll in the middle of the toilet roll is bigger, so it looks like it's the same, but you have less toilet paper, but you're spending the same.
Yeah, they're doing that in the food world now, where they're making the boxes the same, but the inside packaging is smaller with less content. That's the reason why the coin, they have the security rims on the edge. So if you try to take from the edge, it would destroy the rims on the edge of the coin. That's the reason for having the rims on the edge of a coin. So you could always see if it was actually being toyed with, supposedly, or reduced down with the Stanley knife. Yeah, it's one of those things with security. That's why a lot of people do like the coins as well. I forgot to actually mention that earlier, Len, is the fact that you've got the rimming edge that will actually prevent any texturing off of any silver. Whereas the bars, if you're very creative, you can still make it look very seamless if you do it equally both sides and across the top. You can start trimming off the edge. But really, in retrospect, you just put the bar on or the coin on a weighing scale and it should be 31.1, 31.2 grams. Your best method.
Does it matter? Like, I just went and got some. I haven't looked at, I probably bought some years ago, which are the ones I'm looking at now. You can see they're really quite tarnished.
Oh, tarnishing's good. That's fine. Yeah, tarnishing. I actually like tarnished coins because A, it shows it's genuine. Actually, it has a little bit of, not everything should be shiny in this world.
Yeah.
Basically, it just shows that it's genuine. It's been in a moist environment, but once again, that's a natural protectant on silver. So, back in England, you have moss on the roofs of a lot of old houses. It's a natural protection for the weather. So silver, in this case, decides it wants to put its winter jacket on. And that's what it decides to do. It'll actually tarnish. It's got its winter jacket on. When it's ready for summer, it'll just get dipped into some silver solution. It takes a split second, and it's got its swimming trunks on ready, and it'll look nice and shiny again.
That's a good way to look at it. I was only thinking in terms of trading it. People are, who don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Are you going to look, oh my God, you know, how do I know that's silver? Even regardless of what it says on it.
Yeah. If you come to that stage, I would you can buy silver solution from Home Depot, et cetera. And you can just put it in just a little bit in the Tupperware, enough to submerge the coin, dip it in, and then put it in some lukewarm water, and you'll be good.
Yeah.
It takes a second.
Hey, coming back to the mining, like people who do the mining, like the miners or the minerettes, I guess, if there's women. Yeah. Like, is it a good industry to get into? Like, they're going to need people to mine stuff. They're going to need the actual people to do the work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think moving forward with a commodity that A, has been suppressed for so many years, looking forward, one of the things about silver is also fantastic. Like I say, with its future potential, Is there enough being produced right now? Who knows? They're always playing with the market, saying there's enough now, but there isn't. We've had a great supply, but I know in the United States, they're restricting the supply. So you can't buy freely as easy in the US that I'm aware of. We've had a lot of customers wanting to buy from us because they can't buy in their states in the US. So this is not across, of course, all 50 odd states, but it's we've had some in the middle parts of the US that have actually literally wanted to buy from us because they can't buy it wherever they're from. So moving forward, when it comes to mining, if you've got a successful mine that's even being branched out right now and you can get into that industry, absolutely, because I think it's a seamless industry that's going to be fantastic in the future. It's going to be required for one thing. Oh yeah, that's the maple. Yeah.
And then there's other ones down here too. One with a tiger on it, saber-toothed tiger. And the point I showed you from all different years too.
So. They did an animal series. If it's a Royal Canadian Mint one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Lynn,
you know, when you said about Robert Kiyosaki, he did a YouTube video, I think is in Argentina, and he was investing, or he is, or he has already invested in a precious metals mine.
We didn't mention that yet on this call, but thank you. Yeah. What I heard recently was that hold on. Oh, I'm so glad you remembered. Yeah. So my great uncle invested in a whole bunch of mining certificates. So here's one. Yeah. After he died, my dad looked into them to see, like, this is from 1934.
Wow.
For exactly 5 units, capitalization was $35,000. Each unit exchangeable for 300 shares in a $3 million company to be formed. So this was certificate number 752. 5 units from the head office down on King Street East in Toronto. So, okay, that reminded me of those because I found them and I asked Dad about it. He'd already looked into it years before that they weren't worth anything. You know, he looked into it, obviously. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I saw this video with Robert Kiyosaki saying that now with the technology that they have, you can look at where some of these claims used to be and be able to determine with you know, your infrared or whatever it is, to see that they were close, but they missed the main vein of the mine. And so he's been able to he's been able to get into mining in a way and buy mines that were thought to be worthless. So I have a friend who works with mining companies, and some of these certificates, there's like probably 20 of them here, from different companies that my great uncle was investing in. And so I really need to sit down with her and go through them and just see what might still be viable. I mean, it's fascinating to imagine, right?
You know what? It was the bonds are literally a promissory note, I guess. And some would have gone through some of the mining companies would have either in fruition, a lot of mining companies have gone down and they've gone to zero. So it really comes to, with bonds, I find them very intriguing because they do have a collector value one way or another, just from an aesthetic perspective. But with the bonds, you've got to be careful. There must be a bonds expert out there that to see actually what is actually realistic, what is actually out there that can actually be reclaimed. That is a legality part I do not understand. Whereas obviously Robert Kiyosaki is, he was able, like you said, he's got the technology now to, I don't even know, this would be very interesting to find out. I'm assuming that it's not cheap to have. So how do we get this technology so we can start rummaging for gold and silver ourselves? But
okay, so if you had an eye for it, you would be a bonsai.
Bonsai, very cute. Bonsai. Let's get a bonsai tree. Let's make it a silver.
I won't hold that against you, Lynn.
Thank you.
That's good.
Bonsai.
There must be a bond, a search engine that's actually going to allow you to be able to put in the company name, the bond number, whether it's registered or not. If it wasn't registered, I don't know. It would be a case of seeing if that company actually still exists first. So it's a little bit of a sleuthing going on.
Yes.
And is just silver still alive when they were actually putting silver in coins in the 60s and up to the 60s? Or is that still a thing?
No, no longer. I think England stopped production in 1946, The US then stopped in 1970, funnily enough, 1 year later, you go on to the fiat currency. Canada stopped in 1968.
Yes,
right. With theirs.
But if you have coins from there or earlier.
Absolutely, keep them, keep them. Because all they're going to do is you're going to get the melt value unless there's a collector value. If you've got a 1948 Canadian silver dollar and it's in perfect condition, it can be worth thousands of dollars, then sell it. Then you can buy those thousands of dollars right. real commodity like a silver.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't have an inherent collector value, keep it. That's what I would do.
I don't think I have any of those.
I think I got one from the 1800s.
The US one. So if it's 1800s, that would be a Morgan dollar. It depends if it's got CC. So Lynn, if you see CC on the back in very, very small, that's Carson City. They're collectible. So need to have a look.
Are they pure silver too?
90% silver. There's 0.77 of a troy ounce in the US silver dollar. And there's 0.6 of an ounce in the Canadian dollar from 5 to 67.
Geez, yeah. So much information.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot out there. You know what? The stuff that we don't even know. It's not the knowledge that we know, it's the stuff that's being kept from us.
So the main mines that you were mentioning when we talked earlier this week, you were mentioning Australia, South Africa, and Canada are where the main mines are located for silver and gold?
Yes. So you've got, you've got South Africa. Canada's got a huge list of mines. US doesn't have that many. Australia's pretty heavy on it too.
It's actually silver ore. You said it's a byproduct of...
Copper, nickel, and zinc mainly is a byproduct. So they're not really dedicated to going for silver. It's just a byproduct of what they're finding because obviously of the industrial use of copper and zinc, etc. Yeah.
Fascinating. So much to know. Well, Ashley Richmond, also known as Ash, thank you so much for being with us today. And Len, for hanging in. You're the last one standing.
I'm sitting, actually.
Well, Lynn, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I hope there was something we could take away. I hope it was useful.
Oh, definitely.
And yeah, if you have any questions, Lynn, or anything, yeah, you can always, Lynn will give you the information or whatever, and I'm always happy to help anytime. So, always here for a fellow preservation wealth family, can we call it? Yeah. Whether it's silver, gold, or anything else, but silver, yeah, it's. I know that was the topic today, but silver is absolutely fantastic. So,
all right.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Lynn. Nice meeting you.
Same here. Good to see you again, Lynn.
Yeah, you too, Lynn. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.